Okay, this is the kind of thing I'm talking about. This is the kind of bullcrap press that never, that this gets out and makes me look bad, that is not really anything like that. I mean, it's just
I don't even think we could start the show now after seeing that. Good
the show
evening,
starting? Oh
good
my
evening,
God.
everybody. Welcome to HoopsHD.com's Hoops HD Report, aka the David Griggs Police Blotter. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. With us, almost a full cast tonight. Let me start in the middle there with Joby. Welcome back, Joby, and congratulations on the birth of your daughter.
Yes, no, we have added a second progeny, and we're very pleased. But hopefully you'll excuse my absence over the last few weeks for that reason.
Yeah, I think that there's a few things that can outrank college hoops, and that may be one of them. But also, Joby.
I will babysit for free, Joby. Well, maybe not for free, but I will babysit.
Well, David Griggs joining us again as well. David, how are you?
Well, how was I supposed to know it wasn't a real keg? I mean, that's...
Also joining us, John Stalika's back again. John, how are you over there?
Yeah, it's been quite an eventful weekend for us over in Xavierland.
Yeah, we're going to get to some little Big East talk here. Some pretty big games out of the Big East to start conference play last week. But finally with us as well is John Tytel. John, how are you doing?
Good. I'm glad that we're the only big thing happening in college basketball tonight.
Yes. Thank God there's nothing like, you know, the two number one teams battling each other or anything like that. But we might go a little bit quicker tonight than normal just because I think there might be a game on to watch. I don't know. But
that game is over by most of you, by the time most of you will be watching this, so we don't know the outcome.
Yeah, so we're not going to be discussing the outcome of that game, not because we don't think it's an important game, but because we decided to record this before the game started, actually. Yeah. But first of all, I want to get to a couple of things that you may have seen on the website, and we just wanted to mention them. And one of them was that, John T., you posted your midseason awards about a week ago or so. I guess it was the Best of 2015 Season to Date Awards. They're actually on the website now. There's also a link right up top of the website called Midseason Awards, if anybody out there that hasn't checked them out. John, just any thoughts about the awards and anything that surprised you when you were putting them together?
Yeah, so what I've been doing for the past few years is just trying to go through every single conference. Obviously, a lot of people know that Buddy Hield is the best player in the Big 12 and stuff like that. I like to dig into the smaller conferences so people can realize who else is out there and give the little guys a little recognition. Sometimes it's a very easy thing. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that Ben Simmons is the best player in the SEC. In the Big East, though, you have so many amazing players, it's hard. I mean, I try to do a guard-guard, forward-forward center lineup. And when you have three forwards like Ben Bentel, Roosevelt Jones, and Henry Ellenson, amongst many others, somebody gets left out. So there's always a little controversy, and I don't claim to be an expert, but I try to look at the stats and figure out the best all-around players. I don't just want gunners who score 30 a game. I want guys who can rebound and play defense and stuff like that.
Well, I know personally I was kind of offended that you left me off of the Big West team, but But yeah, David, you and John S. have been posting our brackets over the last few weeks here, our Hoops HD brackets on the website as well that are up there on the bracket projections. But we've done something a little bit different this year now, starting at this point.
Yeah, we're going to be posting two types of brackets. One assumes that, you know, the staff that you see here and some other people, that we are the committee. We're disregarding the real committee, and we're building brackets as if we were the committee. So there's no attempt to guess it. But we have, and I think this is on his business card, selection committee guessing expert John Tytel. He will be posting his brackets in an attempt to guess what the actual committee was doing. I have noticed, sometimes I check the stats, and we're getting a lot of references from a site called Bracket Matrix. I didn't realize until this year that I guess they were ranking our brackets that weren't guessing the committee against those that were. And this is where we came in. This is fascinating here. They ranked us. I'm trying to get it on the screen. We are in Tier 3, which is 3-plus years of below average. I think that sums up us to a T.
And there we are, right with Jerry Palm, I see.
Is it really? Yeah. So So we're hoping to improve on that now that we have someone that actually not only tries to guess the committee but is good at it. John, just full disclosure, the best I ever did was 59 within one of the actual seed line, and you regularly break 60, so I'm kind of jealous. But all that means is that the committee doesn't know what they're doing.
You agree with him, John? You want to...
Yeah. No, so I'm flattered, and thank you for that. So, I mean, it doesn't – I mean, there's some parameters here. Obviously, if a team is undefeated like Oklahoma, there's a good chance they're one seed. If a team is a great team in a smaller conference like a Monmouth another great team from a small conference, I'd say SMU, but obviously this is not the year for that.
Chattanooga.
And then you just got to figure out where they fit in because, like, if Kansas plays Oklahoma, hypothetically, and one of them wins, then I assume that person's going to be ranked higher. And it changes every week, and a little crowdsourcing and a little homework, I do my best.
Yeah, and of course, you always have to factor in with the actual committee, the membership is always changing. So while you can look at patterns, it's difficult to really see how much a pattern goes on. I think that's one of the things that I've always run into when trying to guess the committee myself, at least.
Right. It's kind of funny talking to different people that have been on the committee and that are on the committee, and you kind of try and get out of them, well, what is it that you're looking for? And you could ask, you know, 6 or 7 people that and get 15 different answers. And if you've ever been on any sort of a committee, be it a hiring committee, a rules committee, party planning committee, you know, for instance, like when we plan the staff parties here, I never think there's enough alcohol, but I get overruled. It's just like any sort of committee. Sometimes the person that wins the argument is the one who yells the loudest. It isn't an exact science, but, you know, John does his homework. He researches it, he gets out and talks to them, and he's incredibly accurate. So.
Let's go. We're going to go right into the conferences here, and I'm going to not go in the order that I think you all think I'm going to go in, if that made any sense. But I wanted to start off with actually over in the Big Ten. And Joby, could any of team in the nation have had a better week this past week than Iowa did?
No. Wow, the Hawkeyes. You know, I think I thought they were a tournament team before this weekend, but I didn't think they could possibly challenge for a protected seed. And now you've got to really think about it. I mean, think about the wins that they have piled up now and have a nice record. You know, McCaffrey's doing something right there. You know, right now you've got to look at him seriously for a protected seed. And, you know, they can fight. Now that they have a win over Michigan State, they have a legitimate shot at fighting Michigan State for the regular season title, which – carries a lot of weight with it. I don't know if they'll be able to maintain this, but I think they can, actually.
I think we have to point out the obvious 10-foot asterisk that comes with that win, though. I mean, it's a great win, but it was at home. Iowa is very tough to beat at home, and they were without Valentine for the game.
Yeah.
They were without Valentine, but I think what really impressed me was not even as much the Michigan State win, but to then go to Purdue and just look so good and beat. You're not playing an undermanned Purdue team there.
I agree with that. I was actually more impressed with that. Now, I realize that some of you may be surprised when I say this. I kind of admire teams that win away from home a little bit. I think going into Purdue was a bigger win than beating a shorthanded Michigan State team at home. And you look at Iowa, they were up 20 in the second half on Iowa State. They blew it, and I just kind of dismissed it as, oh, man, they blew that. But to come very close to winning at Iowa State, to beating Michigan State at home, to winning at Purdue, those are three incredibly impressive results right there.
And you add in a nice win over Florida State, and it, you know, which will be a bubble team probably come March.
Well, John S., let me bring you in the conversation here. The other team that's really started to look good here in the Big Ten is Maryland, now 13-1. And, yes, it was only Northwestern they beat who is never made the tournament before, although they've looked better this year. But to have done it in such dominating fashion this weekend on the road.
Yeah, Northwestern was a nice win, but let's not also forget that they had to pull a rabbit out of their hat just to escape at home against Penn State. It looked like the Nittany Lions were going to pull off the upset for the first 32 minutes of that game, but as we know, only high school games are 32 minutes. In college, you got to play those extra 8.
John T., how about the rest of the Big Ten here? And I think maybe the team that nobody's discussing might be this Michigan team, who is kind of, was kind of highly ranked coming into the season and just kind of fallen under the radar by everybody, from everybody.
Yeah, no, they are 12-3, which deserves a lot of credit, and they've lost to three good to great teams in Xavier, SMU, and UConn. That being said, I'm not ready to put them in the tourney just yet. I believe Caris LeVert has a lower leg injury, which after his previous lower leg injuries gives me a lot of cause for concern. I think Spike Albrecht had to quit the team and his career earlier this year due to injuries. So if they can get a good trainer in Ann Arbor, I like their chances, but I'm a little cautious.
They are so snake bitten by injuries the last couple years. I mean, good grief.
Yeah, is that? Do you think there's a greater issue there if you're that snake bitten that maybe there's something with the training staff?
Yeah. I mean, you can't help. I mean, anybody can get injured at any time. I mean, it's a freak thing. You can't really control it specifically. But when you have this many in this period of time over the last 2 years, really, you kind of have to start looking at some of your training methods and practice methods and ask if you need to reevaluate that. That is a little bit, I don't know. It's just, or maybe they're just the unluckiest team on the planet.
Well, talking about a team that we also kind of wrote off a few weeks ago that's slowly putting together much better resumes, this Indiana team, Joby. Are they back, or is this just and they've benefited from the fact that they've been playing Kennesaw and Rutgers and Nebraska?
Well, they beat Notre Dame recently, too.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, you know, and I'm not saying Notre Dame's the God's gift to basketball this year. They're not the Elite Eight almost beating Kentucky team. But they're still a good team, and Indiana won. Indiana is going, I think, is squarely a bubble team right now. We'll see how they develop the rest of the year, but they have, I mean, come on, with Green, you know, they're either going to soar high or they're going to crash. And I think they have the potential to make it, you know, but they've got to go out. You know, they can't have the silly losses. They can't go to Illinois and lose and, you know, the those sort of that drone on. But, you know, that's kind of where Indiana is. That's what a bubble team is. You can't figure them out 100%.
Now, if you want to talk about sleeping giants, let's not forget Indiana. Let's also look a little further east than Ohio State. I mean, one of their talented freshmen from early in the year, I think it was Grindstaff, who transferred out, and a few days after, they beat Kentucky on, I guess, what can be called a neutral floor in Brooklyn. And then they've quietly put together a couple wins in Big Ten play against Illinois and Minnesota. I mean, granted, that's what we consider taking care of business, but they're going to remain in the discussion, I think, throughout the course of the year.
I agree with that. They're getting there. I think they've won five or six straight, including wins at Kentucky. Indiana has kind of impressed me, too, just to throw this in. I mean, to go into Nebraska and get that win, I mean, the refs kind of helped them out. But Nebraska's really poised. As tough as this conference is, they're just two games out of first right now. They're midway through the year.
Let's take a quick look, though, at some of the upcoming games here. I know we normally do this at the end of the show. We thought for this week, now that we're into conference play, we could actually discuss some upcoming games while we are going through each individual conference. Coming up Wednesday night, we've got Ohio State and Northwestern, and Thursday, Wisconsin's at Indiana, and Michigan is at Purdue. And over the weekend, we've got Maryland, Wisconsin, and Ohio State, Indiana coming up. Is there anything that really stands out to you, David, about these upcoming games?
Ohio State and Indiana, not because, I mean, I realize, and again, the bracket, the whole body of work, but if you don't look at the whole body of work, if you just look at the last few weeks, how well Indiana and Ohio State have been playing. They got some momentum built up. I think they're going in the right direction, and at the end of the year, I think we're going to be looking at that a lot more closely than we probably think right now.
And let's not forget Purdue, who also got off to a slow start last year, but also warmed up nicely during Big Ten play.
Yeah, good point.
Well, moving on here, John T., you know I have to ask you this. Over in the Pac-12, Bobby Hurley got ejected because the refs were completely one-sided favoring Arizona, correct?
I mean, I thought that winning the game was going to be the best part when you face your in-state rival who's beaten you in Tempe past 2 years in a row. But if there was ever a cherry on top, it was seeing Bobby Hurley go ballistic at the refs, then go ballistic again to get a second tee, walk off the court imploring the fans to go nuts, and then they still lost. It was one of the greatest days of my entire life.
This was somewhat calculated, I think. I mean, human beings just don't get that angry. Puppets do, but the only thing I can't figure, what in the world was he trying to accomplish? He left in such, it was so spectacular. I mean, I DVR'd it and watched it again. It was so good.
It harkened back to another Bobby, so to speak.
Yes, it did. I mean, this was Baseball Manager goes ballistic good. It was so incredible.
But John, I think the thing that kind of surprised me now is Tarzewski's back playing for Arizona. As of last week, things did not look that good for him from what the reports we had been hearing.
Yeah, he could be the X factor. I mean, they've tried to have Ryan Anderson and Dusan Hristic and the other big guys take over for him and occasionally go to a smaller lineup, and it doesn't get much smaller than the backup point guard, Parker Jackson Cartwright, who's about 5'7", I believe. But if Gabe York is hitting threes, the defense wasn't great. ASU put up like 80-something points, but they're literally like a few points away from a loss of Providence from being undefeated. I still don't think they're a Final Four team, but they are exceeding my expectations. And I really think the conference is theirs for the taking, especially with last weekend's variety of upsets. It seemed like all the good teams lost to all the bad teams.
Yeah, well, let's start with one of them. John S., how about this Utah team? Had a real good week, didn't they?
In a bizarro world, they did.
overtime loss to Stanford, and then a blowout loss at Cal.
Yeah, with Utah's loss is actually going to be Cal's game. And even Colorado managed to get a win in the Bay Area, something the Utes were not able to manage.
Okay, so they have the win over Duke, which was a neutral floor, but it was a very pro-Duke site. But other than that, in their true road games, they've lost all three of them. And in two of them, they lost huge. How is the committee, and again, I know it's a little early to be having this discussion, but is this a problem that this team cannot win true road games?
Well, Joby, how important does this become coming up this week when Friday night they're at Colorado?
Yeah, well, it's the two teams that had a little stumble in Berkeley, so it's kind of a neat showdown in that regard. It's important because Utah was very seriously, in my opinion, looking at protected seed land with the Duke win. Just typical solid Utah, they're going to be competing for the Pac-12 title sort of thing. The luster, given that trip out to the Bay Area, has really taken the luster off. They need to turn the ship around. Colorado kind of did a little bit. The Utah, this is a big deal that could then spin out. All of a sudden, we're looking at a 500 team, or given how deep the Pac-12 is, and I do think it's a very deep conference this year. I mean, even Oregon State is very competitive and strong so far this year. They could be looking at a losing record because 0-3 is a tough hole to dig out of. I think it's more on Utah. I think you got to focus on Utah on this one.
And outside of Utah's win over Duke, they both have decent wins, but not really any signature wins against teams in the field. So, again, with Colorado and Utah, one team is going to get a leg up as far as getting into the field.
Well, we discussed the Oregon schools. We just discussed the Colorado-Utah schools. Switching over to the Oregon schools, Oregon State gets the big home win over Oregon. Are either team for real, or are they both going to be in trouble? What do you think of both these schools?
I am loving the Beavers. They're 10-2. They've beaten good teams like Tulsa, Iona, and the huge win at home against the Ducks. Their only losses are a semi-away game at Kansas City, and a 6-point loss at home, be it to Valpo, who's probably going to make the tourney. They've got a very tough road to hoe. They have their own Bay Area hosting series. Then they go to Colorado and Utah. So too early to tell, but I love Wayne Tinkle as a coach. I love Gary Payton II as like the Pac-12 Player of the Year and maybe an All-American. I am a Beaver believer.
But David, actually, some of the games here involve the Oregon teams. They'll both be hosting Cal. Oregon on Wednesday, Oregon State on Saturday. Is this a tough week for Cal. I mean,
it is. Oregon is a snake pit. They can't seem to win when they cross the street. They did have the win against Navy out in Hawaii, but other than that, they haven't done much. But they are really, really tough at home. I mean, it's a snake pit there. The thing about Oregon State, I think beating Oregon at home was more important off paper than it was on. This is typically – this program has not had any enthusiasm, electricity, or excitement about it really in the past 3 decades, seemingly. And now, like, when you win a conference game against a rival and you get that bloated record, I think it does more for your conference, and it does more to stimulate your fan base. And that's probably more important for the state of their program right now than their profile. But, I mean, these are two huge games really for Oregon State coming up. And if they can beat Cal, I mean, granted, all these wins would have come at home. But you've got to start seriously looking at them, like John said. That's pretty impressive. But, yeah, it's never easy when you the Pac-12 still being set up with the travel partners, when you go to the Oregon schools, when you go to the Bay Area, when you go to Arizona, and you're playing back-to-back road games in hostile environments, it's really, really hard to come out with one win, much less two.
Well, Joe, but kind of the flip side of that is Cal having this road trip, and you saw your Hoos beat them earlier this year. But this Cal team is starting to look really good.
Yeah, Rab has... You know, he's not going to put up with a ton of points, but man, the guy's got strong hands. He's one of the best natural rebounders I've seen. And Matthews from the outside, no one talks about him. They talk about Brown and Rab, you know, as the outstanding freshman. But it's actually the junior Matthews who could be the very key to loosening up the middle so Brown can drive the lane, so Rab can get some more inside presence. This Cal team's real. I saw them in Charlottesville. I was extremely impressed. I was, maybe it's through the Homer glasses that you look at things, but they gave Virginia all they could handle, and then some. If that game was in Berkeley, Cal wins the game, not Virginia. I think Cal's good enough to go on the road. They were not deterred. Virginia won that game at the end as opposed to Cal losing it. So I think Cal can win some road games. They can make some noise. And I think they can be as high as a protected seed. They're replacing Utah in my pecking order because I had the ceiling I had for Utah is starting to be replaced by Cal.
Well, one other team I think we've got to discuss here that had an awful week as well, John. The UCLA Bruins go and get swept to the Washington schools. is this it for UCLA? 6 losses already on the season.
I don't want to say that that's it quite yet, but, I mean, they do have 5 of their 6 other losses that could be NCAA tournament teams. I mean, we have Monmouth, we have a couple teams from the Maui tournament as well as North Carolina, but their win at Gonzaga is going to keep them above water for now. But for as much of a bad week as UCLA had, I would have to say Washington is the under-the-radar big winner this week in the Pac-12. Not just UCLA, but also a big comeback win against the Trojans.
Well, do you agree with that, John T? Do you think Washington's a team that's suddenly moving into the radar as UCLA falls off of it?
Absolutely. I mean, they're only 10-4, and they've had a loss to Santa Barbara at home, so far from the bubble being certain. And it took them 2 overtimes to beat UCLA at home on New Year's Day. That being said, they're a very young team. They lost a ton of people, including their McDonald's All-American point guard, Nigel Williams-Goss, who transferred to the aforementioned Gonzaga Bulldogs. They have a great young team with a ton of freshmen. And like Joby was saying with Cal, like, the reason we like these teams are because when you have a bunch of freshmen and they get tested, like going to Charlottesville and losing in overtime, it only makes them better. And I think that UCLA, they have some good freshmen too, but they are, I think, more of a senior, veteran-heavy team with guys like Alford. And so when you have these young teams that win early or even have faced adversity early, continue to get better as March approaches. So I think the Huskies are going to look very good and be very dangerous for the month ahead.
Well, the Arizona schools are in Southern Cal this week. The big game, Arizona at UCLA Thursday night. But let me stick with you, John T. Do you think the Bruins can win that, or do you think that they're going to have – that they're in trouble now after what they did over the past weekend?
A little trouble. I mean, I like the Cats' chances. I'm sure that Bill Walton will be calling the game and will thereby jinx the Wildcats as he often does. But he's always entertaining, and it's tough. His kid Luke went to Arizona, and his UCLA is where he went to school himself, so not sure how the divided loyalty goes, but I think my guys will put up a good effort.
Well, UCLA may be in better shape than we realize, because as we learned last year, the committee was very impressed with how they dominated sub-100 teams. And took them anyway.
Let's move on to the Big East Conference here. And John S., bring you in about on some Xavier talk. Edmund Sumner, scary looking injury of last week.
Well, my understanding is he is going through concussion protocol, and he's already missed the Butler game and is not going to be playing on Wednesday at St. John's, but they do have a week off after St. John's before they play games against Marquette and DePaul, so they will have a decent chance to show the committee that they can win without Sumner.
Well, as we
expect to be back, well, I guess the concussion protocol, it's you don't know because they're all different. Some people, they're back at functioning in a week or so, and some people it's longer. And just so everyone knows, this is kind of a new thing. I think within the last year or two, this concussion protocol that schools are required to have. It used to be you could suffer a concussion and actually return to that same game. That wasn't unusual. Now it's a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. You have to meet certain benchmarks before you're even allowed to return to class, much less to return to practice and play. So it really is indefinite how long he'll be out, but good God, I'm assuming you all saw it. What a frightening few minutes.
Joby, when we look at the Big East where we stand right now, if you look at RPIs, and I know RPI is still pretty meaningless at this point in the season, but you've got three top 10 teams here with Xavier, Villanova, and Providence, and more importantly, Xavier number one in the RPI and number one strength of schedule in the country right now.
So Villanova
number five strength of schedule in the country. Yeah. I mean, how good is the top of the Big East here?
It's very good. I mean, I have arguments with people who don't pay attention to Big East basketball all the time. I mean, they know Villanova, Crimson Tournament, blah, blah, and they know Georgetown, but they don't understand how good this Xavier team, how good this Butler team, how good this Providence team are. They are top-of-the-line type teams. I have been saying it for a long time. Xavier right now, on my bracket sheet, and for what take it for what it's worth, has beaten more teams in the field than anybody else.
Well, I think that's why they got the number one strength of schedule in the country.
I mean, they have eight wins over the top 100. They've only played 14 games. Over half their wins are over the top 100. And I actually have had people say, oh, they haven't been tested. Really? They have passed the test. The one loss they obviously had the Sumner injury. This is a real team, and I think you can apply that also to Providence and Butler and a lot of these other teams. The Big East at the top, Villanova has the known cachet to the public writ large, and they deserve it this year. They're a good team, but they have company at the top of the Big East, and it's going to be a lot of fun watching Fox Sports, to be honest, if you need to focus in on it.
John T., the other team in the Big East that I know crept into your bracket, that you made your last bracket, and I think you all laughed at me when I told you to watch out for them going into the season, is the Seton Hall team, now sitting at 12-2. What do you like about this team?
The backcourt, Carrington and Whitehead, Brooklyn born and bred, and they are getting work done. I think they're each scoring like 15 points a game. The neutral site loss to Long Beach State is not great, but it was only 3 points and neutral. The GW loss by 8 on the road is looking great. Even Virginia loses at GW, for God's sake. Wichita State in overtime, huge win. A couple SEC middle-of-the-pack teams, decent. The big game coming up at Villanova on Wednesday night. I don't think they're going to be able to get over the Wildcats, but 12-2 is a great start. And even though it's a very difficult conference, I could see Seton Hall hanging around, winning 20, and getting onto the bubble.
Yeah, one thing people are learning about Seton Hall is you do not cross Kevin Willard. That's Isaiah Whitehead and I think it was Desi Rodriguez who were benched for long periods of time against Wichita State and also DePaul.
Yeah, I really think that there's a lot of addition by subtraction with this Seton Hall team off of last year, where they were just a complete turmoil off the court. But David, is there anyone else in the Big East that you think is looking like they could sneak into the tournament, be it a Georgetown or a Marquette, or you want to make a case for somebody else like St. John's?
Not St. John's. I still think that Georgetown's biggest problem is that they just scheduled too many bye games. At the end of the day, they're probably going to have a better record against the Big East than they will in their bye games, losing to Radford, Monmouth, UNC Asheville. But I just can't help but think, I mean, they're all over the map. They're real schizophrenic. But how anybody that goes to Maryland, who we talked about earlier in the show, and almost beats them, anybody that loses that, plays Duke that closely and almost beats them, has got to have a tough ceiling. They've just got to start playing up to it. I still think this Georgetown team could get in. And the Big East is going to provide them with the opportunities to get those notable wins.
Okay, and just to move, one other game of note that's coming up at the Big East over the weekend, Villanova at Butler on Sunday, so that's just one other game to keep an eye on. But let's move on to the ACC. Joe, but you've been waiting for the ACC talk. How good is this Virginia team looking right now? I know last time we spoke, you weren't that high on them this season.
Well, I mean, the jury still should be out a little bit, but the defense is starting. The reason why I wasn't as high was because the defense was worrisome. As a Virginia person, that's what drives the show. The offense, though, under KenPom, is the number one efficient offense in the country. So maybe defense, and the defense is still top 12, I think. So it's not bad. All of a sudden, the little subtleties are starting to pick up. Now that Virginia, I'm getting deep maybe to our listeners, but you know, Wilkins starting over Toby has added two things. Wilkins has really added a defensive component that Darian Atkins and Akeel Mitchell had from past years. But on top of that, it has freed up Mike Toby to come off against certain teams, and now he's getting 15 points, 16 points against quality opposition. You know, from Notre Dame, Oakland, he dominated, and Oakland's a good team for those out there who don't know better.
They are.
Virginia team is now looking like the team that I projected as a possible Final Four team. Not saying they will be. This is a very wide-open deal, but they have as good a right as anybody in the ACC or across the country to make the claim, hey, we have a shot at Houston.
John T., beyond Virginia, of course, Duke and Carolina, are these also looking like potential one-seed, two-seed type teams to you?
Not one-seed. I mean, just because of the injuries, I think that they're going to get tripped up because Duke has Emile Jefferson out, and the Tar Heels have Kennedy Meeks out. And while they both have a bunch of talent that Krzyzewski and Williams can bring off the bench, I just think it's asking too much and putting a little too much pressure. I do want to give a shout-out in terms of the Tar Heels to Bryce Johnson. They just had a big win over Florida State on the road. He became the first Tar Heel ever to have a 30-20 game, 39 points, 23 rebounds, 14 of 16 from the field. Go, wow. Bryce.
Wow, what a game. David, how about the two Florida schools here, Miami, Florida State? First of all, start with Miami. I've seen some of the brackets that have come out. I don't know if it was yours or John S.'s bracket, had them up right on the one seed.
That was me. I had them on the one line. And again, you got to keep in mind, this is my own personal bias bracket based on merit early in the year, and it's more for getting used to evaluating teams than it is for trying to guess the committee or even guess how good teams really are. And when you look at the merit, you talk about beating Utah and Butler convincingly away from home. You talk about winning at Nebraska. Now, again, that's looking a little less impressive, but Nebraska, as unimpressive as they've been, is a snake pit. They beat Florida. They have just done a lot, and their only loss came on a last-second shot to a decent but not good Northeastern team. I just thought that merit-wise, you talk about beating Utah, Butler, and remember Utah was higher at the time, and Florida and Nebraska, they had done more than anybody else. I don't think they're the best team in the conference, but I think they're probably better than what a lot of people are getting them credit for, and they've certainly done more to earn it than what a lot of other teams have done.
Well, John S., what about Florida State, the other Florida team here? They just gave up all over 100 points to North Carolina tonight, came off a loss at Clemson as well. Do you think this team is going to be in the tournament, or do you think they're in trouble?
Well, about the only thing that's in favor of the Seminoles right now would be wins at Florida, and they also had a win against VCU in Atlanta, but we'll have to wait and see as to whether or not that win of VCU is going to have any value this year.
I don't know that it will. If you look at their upcoming schedule here, at Miami, at NC State, home to Virginia, at Louisville, home to Pitt, they got a tough five games coming up.
If they win those five games, I think they're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Joby just mentioned Louisville. We've got a team here that's nationally ranked, but their best win is a home win over Wake Forest.
Which is a lot
their
better.
Their best wins are by not looking bad when they've lost against very good teams, like the famous Kentucky.
But they've only played two good teams, Michigan State and Kentucky.
My point. Louisville, the jury is most certainly still out. They could go either way, but I do like what I see with my eyes. But you're exactly right on the resume. As far as resumes go, they're a bubble team resume-wise.
Right now.
Right now.
And if the Lopes get the waiver, they'll have a third great win.
Yes. But, now I will say this, and you alluded to it. There is a team, though, the group of us, a number of us, have been touting since the preseason that I will continue to tout, and it's that team that you mentioned. Wake's real. Danny Manning's doing something special there. I'm not saying, they're a protected sea level, but I think Wake is going to be in this tournament at the end of the day. They're going to get that win that they should have got maybe in Louisville this past week.
And they keep getting better, Wake Forest.
Yes.
About Louisville, in this is an extreme case of it, but we see other cases of it where essentially they just took a pass on making any sort of a case for themselves out of conference, with the exception of Michigan State, which they didn't schedule because it was a Big Ten ACC challenge, and Kentucky, which not scheduling that might result in a big crater where the city of Louisville used to be. So really, the only games that weren't fixture games were all crap. I don't agree with that. Patino's in the Hall of Fame. I'm not, at least not yet. I plan to be someday. But how does this make your team better other than you get to play your bench, and what does it do for your paper? The answer to both questions is nothing. So, like you said, Louisville took a pass, and now that actually puts more pressure on them in a hard conference to make a case for themselves.
Couple of teams I actually want to discuss. John T., I noticed in your bracket last week, you had Notre Dame in, you had Syracuse out. Syracuse now hosting North Carolina in the primetime ESPN game coming up Saturday night. What do you like about Notre Dame and dislike about Syracuse right now?
I'll start with Syracuse. I had somebody, when I posted my bracket, I had a reader comment that they were surprised that the Cues were out. I'm like, look, I don't have a problem with losing to Wisconsin and Georgetown. I have a big problem with going to St. John's and losing by double digits. I have a bigger problem with going on the road to Pitt and to Miami, both great teams, but losing by double digits at each. That is something that the committee does not like. As far as the Irish, good losses. Virginia, Indiana, Monmouth by 2 points, Alabama by 1 point. I mean, it'd be nice if they could get a little more meat on the schedule. The Iowa win is going to be a shining star on their resume from back in November, the day after Thanksgiving. They have an easy game against BC this week, and they have a tough stretch. Home to Pitt, home to Georgia Tech, at Duke. If they lose to Pitt and Duke, I think they are going to have trouble getting on the bubble. If they can win one of those two, I think that'll be another nice win to put on the mantle.
Now, if John T. is a good reader of the committee, I want to know how Pittsburgh gets a 5 seed. I expected to be skewered for having Pitt around the 8 and 9 line, but the 5?
12-1, one loss to a good Purdue team. What more do you want?
And they got they got cheated out of a good win that was coming their way overseas. I know the committee doesn't look at that, but your eyes should. I mean, they got cheated out of what should have been a win on that military base.
Well, it was raining.
Talk about the Gonzaga game, of course. Never happened. But let's move over to the SEC, David. Kentucky still the king of the conference?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I don't even know if there's anybody else close to them right now. Florida is good, but they're not as good as Kentucky. No one really is. South Carolina is having a really big year, but I don't think they're on Kentucky's level. That is, I believe they host Kentucky coming up. I lied.
No, you lied. They don't play Kentucky until February 13th.
Right.
On that South Carolina team, actually, Joby, they're scheduled out. They're at Auburn, home to Vanderbilt, at Alabama, home to Missouri, at Ole Miss, at Tennessee, home to Mississippi State. When are they going to lose?
Well, I mean, Alabama's decent, but I think they'll lose just because I'm not 100% sold on them, and it's tough when you're undefeated. The pressure starts to mount you. You're the hunted, et cetera. But it also what you just listed off, so to speak, also shows the weakness of the SEC to a degree. I mean, it's not a deep conference. Yes, you got some, and we'll talk about them. We've got some other teams that are solid. But, man, it's more of indicative of the SEC not being there because the strength of schedule is just pathetic for South Carolina right now. I mean, I would have them actually, you know, they're still wearing white, but barely. in the way I view the world right now, they need to go out and beat somebody, and that schedule, you know, doesn't even provide that. So, you know, it's not when will they lose; it's when are they going to be able to earn their way up to what their record is.
Well, John S. The one team that we've been talking a lot about is this LSU team and how disappointing they've been. Come out with a real nice win at Vanderbilt over the weekend, though. Do you think things are going to start to turn around here for LSU?
Well, as you pointed out, they're starting to do their penance with a win at Vanderbilt, but I'm starting to wonder if that's more of an indictment of the Commodores, who have been underwhelming given what was expected in preseason. But yeah. I certainly wouldn't put it past the Tigers to get a few more notable wins in the SEC.
Yeah, Vanderbilt was everybody's sleeper. And when I say when you're everybody's sleeper, you're no longer a sleeper. I stand corrected. Vanderbilt is a sleeper.
John T., LSU's week this week, they're home to Kentucky Tuesday night. They're at Florida on Saturday. How important is this week for them?
Huge. I don't think they can beat Kentucky at home or Florida on the road just because they haven't shown me too much this year. It's a great win to win at Vanderbilt, even by single digits. And it's nice to get a top 100 team on the schedule because they haven't had many of them all year. Simmons is great. He needs some supporting cast help. And now that Hornsby's healthy, he and the other rest of the Tigers are bringing it. It's going to be a weird resume. And I wonder, people talk about conspiracies with the committee all the time. You know they want Simmons in the tournament, but if this team is 17-11 without any marquee wins, are they getting in? I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
Well, if you look historically at LSU, they do the most damage when they're a bubble team around the 10 or 11 line.
That's true.
Now, David, I was going to ask you about Vanderbilt, but I know that you don't even consider them as a real team because of that court setup they have. So is there anybody else in the SEC, though, that you do that you have been looking at?
I don't know if I like them as far as a bubble team goes, but I will say I am very impressed, surprised and impressed, probably more surprised than impressed, with Alabama. You know, they got out there, they sweat out Kennesaw State, they get blasted by Dayton, and then blasted by Xavier. Since then, they have one loss to Oregon by 4 points. I mean, they haven't beaten any great teams, but they beat Wichita, they beat Notre Dame. You know, they won at Clemson. They are so much better than I thought they'd be, and they're doing it without a key player. Avery Johnson has done a very good job with this team. I'd like to see them make it to the tournament. I don't know if they're quite good enough for that, but am I alone in that? I'm just really impressed with or surprised at how good they have been because I thought they'd be terrible this year.
Well, Joe, I know you've got some Alabama ties, and I also want to ask about the Texas A&M team who had a real big win over Arkansas, but big rivalry the game there, actually.
Well, Alabama, you're exactly right. I think Avery Johnson, there was a question whether he'd be able to translate the NBA to college. But that was focused on recruiting, and so far he's doing the reach-outs as we've discussed in the past. Alabama has played better on the floor, I think David's exactly right, than we fully expected. They are legitimately – we can legitimately look to them as a possible tournament team. Obviously, they're no more than bubble right now, but they have the potential to make noise. The other side, the other team mentioned there by Chad, Texas A&M, they've done their damage. They are looking pretty darn good right now. And I didn't think that they, you know, I thought, oh, if they're going to get in, it's looking like an 11 or 12. They have the potential to really move up and be the second best team in this conference, clearly, you know, ahead of your Floridas, ahead of, you know, Ben Simmons and company. You know, they have a real chance to be that team behind Kentucky and collect some nice wins. The conference isn't that strong, but, you know, you got your Ole Misses. You got your, you know, they'll be able to put up some nice wins and have a real gaudy record and did well out of conference to earn it, you know, to earn some national recognition as well.
Yeah, beat Texas, beat Gonzaga.
Baylor.
Yeah. Let's move over to, you mentioned Baylor, let's move over to the Big 12 where Oklahoma and Kansas had an incredible game tonight, and we're going to let you go on another website to actually see the results because, you know, we just didn't think it was that important. But let's talk about a couple of teams beyond Oklahoma and Kansas, though. West Virginia won at TCU. They struggled with to pick up the win. Iowa State as well, looking good. David, are these both protected seeds as well?
I think they are. This conference is... it's very, very top-heavy with a lot of teams on top. I think West Virginia, they have just the one loss, and it's to Virginia. No real shame in that. They've looked good outside of that. The win at K-State, I mean, K-State isn't great, but it's hard to win there. Oklahoma and Kansas, both really good. They're playing right now. It is a big game, but, again, with Oklahoma City hosting first and second round games and Chicago and Louisville both hosting regionals, not only is it possible that both end up as ones, but it's possible that both end up as ones in pretty good locations all the way through the NCAA tournament, and this game is one of three potential meetings. So, as I said in the write-up, like I don't think the loser really loses much of anything or drops at all after this game.
And Des Moines, Iowa is also a first and second round site for that Kansas would even go to Oklahoma City, Kansas would probably head to Des Moines.
Yeah. So, again, you could have Iowa State, who's way up there too, Oklahoma and Kansas all seated on the two line or higher and all pretty much good geographically. This conference is pretty good. And then TCU is also in the league.
And it's also important to remember that Iowa State cannot play in Des Moines because they're actually the host institution this year.
Correct. John T., this Baylor team, I don't think we kind of discussed them a little bit a few times this year, but I'm getting very unimpressed with this team. I don't know if you agree with me there or not, though.
Sure. I mean, losing by 28 will do that to you, but obviously it's to a number one top-ranked Kansas team, so...
But what have they done other than beat Vanderbilt at home?
Not much. I mean, I love the win over Stephen F. Austin, but that was like 2 months ago, so I don't know how much it's going to carry over. No, the schedule's been weak.
Not at all.
There's not a lot of meat. They go to Iowa State on Saturday, and I think they're going to have some big problems, even with Naslong out. But, I mean, that could save their season. But if not, it's going to be a long year, and they could be heading for the bubble. Like, I thought this team was in, like, a week ago, and now I'm having some doubts.
One other team that I think is heading the opposite direction of Baylor, John S., I got to bring them up to you, the Texas Tech.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I was drawing up a zero earlier for Baylor because they haven't won any games away from home. But Texas Tech, I mean, they haven't even played a true road game, but at least they got a couple decent wins down in Puerto Rico earlier in the year. But if you look at who they've beaten at home this year, South Dakota State, Little Rock, even Richmond and Texas would have some value.
Hawaii has value this year. I know that sounds crazy, but, you know, I think Hawaii's going to win their conference. Yes, all UC Irvine fans, you can shoot me later.
Well, Toby, let me stick with you here. Texas Tech finally goes on the road Wednesday night at Iowa State before hosting Kansas this weekend, so a huge week for them ahead as well.
Yes, Chad loves talking about Texas Tech because he picked them to be good. Let's spend the next 45 minutes talking about Texas Tech.
Listen to the teams that John S. reeled off. You dismiss them, but you know, Hawaii, South Dakota State, UALR, they don't sound sexy, but those are three really solid teams. I mean, UALR is probably, as of right now, I mean, they'll probably fail out with the bad strength of schedule that their conference will provide. They're actually probably in if you did your bracket with blind resumes today.
I definitely think so. So Texas Tech, Chad's team, has a chance to play in the NCAA tournament, which is also known as that event that Rutgers fans watch other teams play in.
Hey, you know, it's really good out to be a Rutgers fan because I always expect my team to lose even when we play Central Connecticut State, so there's never any pressure, there's never any pain from a loss. It's a good thing to be. You know, if you're a Virginia fan, you suffer through games, right, Joby?
Yes, and Chad never has to leave the room during our selection committee.
That is such a low blow.
By the way, John S., you're going to be gone a lot early on this year with your Xavier guys.
David, the Texas Longhorns, back-to-back losses home to UConn at Texas Tech. Where is Shaka's team now? Are they back in trouble again after they looked so good with that Carolina win?
They're in Austin right now.
Okay.
I think they kind of are. I'm not so sure I thought Texas was going to end up inside the bubble anyway. Losing in Texas Tech, no harm. This is they're a pretty decent team that's really hard to beat at home, so that's not too damaging. The losses weren't damaging in the sense that I don't think they hurt them, but they were the kinds of games, especially your home court against UConn, that you need to win if you want to land inside the bubble. They'll certainly have other chances, but those were two, like, in the whole grand scheme of things, as tough as this league is, when you're talking Iowa State twice, Iowa State twice, Oklahoma twice, Kansas twice, you got to pick up the winnable games when you got a chance, and they didn't do that.
And we're also living in an alternate universe where a win at home over Texas Arlington is also helping to keep the Longhorns in the field for now.
John T., let's move over to a couple other conferences quickly here. In the Atlantic 10, we know that you had St. Joe's in your field as of this week. That was before they won at Richmond, I believe.
They're really good. They've only lost to Florida and Villanova. They have a great dynamic duo of Isaiah Miles and DeAndre Bembry. None of the wins blow me away. I mean, Richmond by 4 on the road is good, but not enough to get them over the hump. But they've only lost to great teams. They should be VCU at home tomorrow night. I think they better. And then the huge game, January 20th, when they play Penn at the neutral site of the Celestra, because that is a very neutral site for Penn. But I like their chances.
David, over in the American, UConn, we already mentioned, had the win over Texas, but the Cincinnati team, are they starting to fall apart?
I still think it was more of an anomaly than anything else, that the loss to Temple. It's a game, like, you cannot lose games like that at home. If you're a tournament team, you better beat the non-NIT teams at home. And I think it was more of a toe stub than anything else. They came out and blasted a Tulsa team that isn't good, but it's still a lot better than Temple in the next game. They go to SMU. That's a chance for a notable win. I don't think they're falling apart. I just think they had kind of a bad day.
There is one interesting takeaway from Cincinnati's loss to Temple. I think they said this was the first time in Mick Cronin's tenure that an opponent averaged over 1 point per possession, which is what Temple managed against the Bearcats. Needless to say, Mick Cronin was less than pleased on his post-game conference. And sounded really upset for the first time since he came back from his health issues from last year.
Didn't he apologize to the former players or something? It was pretty classic.
Joby, the Mountain West, is there anything even worth mentioning in that conference anymore?
It's really gotten sad. I think this Boise team's, we'll see what they do. San Diego State is just, they've just imploded there. It's very disappointing, needless to say.
Yeah.
I would look and I'd rate a Mountain West regular season title as something worthwhile. And hell, the committee did. Remember, Air Force floated in one year when they probably shouldn't have. I don't think that it has the cachet or the depth or the numbers, and that's what the committee's supposed to be paying attention to, that last one, to be able to do something like that again. It's not a multiple bid league right now.
One other team we normally do mention a little bit of Gonzaga during the show, and John T. Karnowski out for the season, I believe, with surgery. But yet the Zags snuck back into the top 25 in the coaches' poll today. Is this team have anything here, or is it they just have to win the West Coast Conference?
No and yes. I mean, their last two wins are by 2 points at Santa Clara and in overtime at San Francisco, who are both non-top 200 teams. Got BYU coming up in a week in Spokane, so we'll see how they do. But St. Mary's is also a thing that nobody's talking about. I don't even know if they're an at-large. They've got a 4-point loss to Cal and are 13-1 with not a lot of meat on the schedule, but 13-1 is still pretty good.
Yeah, if memory serves me correctly, they haven't even fallen out of that coaches poll at all this year. It's an AP where they're still unranked.
No, the Zags had fallen out. They did sneak back in there this week, though.
And the voters were very impressed with that overtime win, against San Francisco and the 2-point win at Santa Clara. I mean, really laying the smackdown against sub 200 teams there, the Zags.
So the coaches are completely insane, David.
No, they just don't watch the games. I mean, they know their own team. You would hope to think, and they know the teams they play. And then other than that, they just look at scores, and then they tell their
and the committee will not. And I think John T raises a very good point when you're looking out west at that conference. St. Mary's may have played a lot of patsies, but they have a really gaudy record, and Stanford, UC Irvine, gives at least some credibility. Gonzaga failed at almost all their tests but one out of conference. And so at the end of the day, when you're looking at what could be an underwhelming record, a Stephen F. Austin-esque record at St. Mary's, that's going to get St. Mary's in if they split with Gonzaga. And Gonzaga could be left out because they're going to have closer to that 8-9 losses, which the committee will go, ooh, that strength of schedule, because of the conference. St. Mary's will have an overall record which might boost them and look pretty darn good at the end of the day.
But at least Gonzaga can claim they've been able to do one thing that UCLA has not been able to do so far, and that's beat Washington and Washington State.
Well, I'll tell you what the problem the Zags really have, and Joby mentioned the conference here. Normally you get at least a little bit of decent competition in the rest of the West Coast Conference. You've got five teams in this conference that are sub-250 RPI teams heading into conference play, and that's going to hurt all those power rating numbers for both these teams. But on that note, I want to run through for any final thoughts if there's a team that we haven't mentioned that anyone want to mention or an upcoming game as well. But David, let me start with you.
Okay, and this is more of I'm trying to slide a topic in here and get, since we have John Titel here and John Stalica, who did their brackets today, a couple teams that we normally discuss on Under the Radar, but that are either on the bubble or inside the bubble. And I'm thinking specifically of Monmouth. John is guessing the committee, John T., and he had them, I think, on his 12 line, and then Stalica had them on their 11 line. I want to know what it is, I guess from both of you, what it is you don't like about this team that's won all but one of their games away from home. I just think that what they've done deserves more merit than that. And I guess, why don't you think the committee would be more impressed by that, John Titel?
I'll let John S. have the first word.
Okay.
Well, I guess one of the things I would say is it's true that Monmouth does have a gaudy record away from home, but at some point you have to really consider the losses at Canisius and also at Army, even though they are under the radar teams. I know Army is doing well in the Patriot League, but that's a team that an NCAA at large should be able to win on the road. I mean, it is a strike, but it doesn't keep them out of my field yet.
Yeah. John T.
I also like, from scheduling purposes, I mean, it's one thing to play good or bad teams at home. Before tonight, January 4th, guess how many home games Monmouth has played all year?
Well, one. No, you don't understand. Why, I'm asking why you don't have them higher, like better in your standings. I think Monmouth should be way on inside the bubble right now.
They have some good wins, but I kind of like John S.'s rationale that they have some bad losses. I mean, I don't think a lot of top six, top seven seeds have lost to Canisius and Army, period.
David, I can answer this question for you very simply. There is no team that's inside the bubble at anybody's bracket that has such a lousy home record, only two wins. I mean, you've got to be better at home than only two wins at this point.
Okay, yeah.
But, let's continue with the final thoughts. Joby, you're up next.
That's very good. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, when you look at the numbers, I mentioned this in the nitty-gritty page. What you want to look at is conference depth of how people can pile up solid wins that then can look good for the committee down the road. Two conferences, the middle, you know, has really risen to be reasonable and reasonable wins, and that's the Pac-12 and the ACC. You know, yes, they have some slugs like Boston College, but for instance, the ACC has 12 of their 15 teams can legitimately say, "Hey, we're within shouting distance of the bubble." Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, so all of a sudden, unless you're Florida State and Clemson doing exactly what I'm about to say, or NC State, Virginia Tech, as long as you avoid losing to the crap, you're not piling up a bunch of losses. And if you happen to be one of those teams that with a winning record, you're going to make the tournament. And I think you're going to see those two conferences get the UCLA treatment of, well, they didn't have a lot of bad losses. They didn't pile up a ton of great wins, but they didn't have a lot of bad losses, and some of that will float up, whereas you could see with your Minnesotas and some of these other teams that are being disappointed in conferences like the Big Ten getting hurt likewise. And that's my numbers statement for the day, I guess.
John S.?
Yeah, when you look at conferences like the Mountain West and the Missouri Valley that are accustomed to getting multiple bids and possibly being relegated to automatic bids, it's going to raise opportunities for teams in other conferences to take some of those bids in their places. And yes, I'm looking at you, Memphis and Houston in the American.
Ooh, Memphis and Houston. He just went there. John, to your thoughts.
So apparently this is the night. There's usually some winless team that makes it to Martin Luther King Day or even February. There were three entering tonight. Delaware State's already won by almost 50 points somehow. Prairie View A&M is 0-13. They're leading in the first half.
Ooh.
And Mississippi Valley State is 0-14. They're up double digits at halftime. Perhaps by Tuesday there will be zero winless teams in Division One.
Well, again, we're talking about winless against anybody. Delaware State, I know, was a non-D1 win. Mississippi Valley State, with that, if they get that win, will lose out on the chance for the record, for that 0-33 record, which would have been an all-time high by anybody. No one has ever lost 33 games in a season before, but may not happen. But my final thought is one other game that's coming up next week of slight importance that I want to give my prediction on. Clemson's going to win, Joby. Sorry. Championship, a different sport though. But on that note, we want to thank everybody for joining us. Most of us are going to go to watch Kansas Oklahoma. Joby's going to watch Virginia lose to Va Tech, and have a good
time. Yeah, bracket rundowns are starting soon, so.